I'm going to put it in lecture mode. And we can begin this call. So peace, brothers and sisters. I want to welcome you to the first Black Wallets Matter Town Hall meeting of 2018. I hope everyone enjoyed their holiday. Hope everyone enjoyed family, friends, food. I know I put on about 10, 15 pounds. So I hope everyone enjoyed that. My name is Brother Lou. I'll be your host for this evening. If this is your first time calling in, then I want to just run down a few ground rules for how we manage these calls, and then we'll open it up to a general discussion. So these calls, they usually last about 2 hours. If we have a really good one, we can extend it. If no one is interested and it's a quiet night, then we can cut it short. But let me just say in advance, we appreciate you coming to hang out with us. And I hope you're feeling inspired because this is a new year, right? So we all live. We're a little bit older. We're a little bit wiser. The batteries are recharged. We've recommitted to, our goals and our missions. And also because you're now on a platform with a group of like-minded brothers and sisters who have come together and who are dedicated to discuss and implement solutions to many of the problems that we face in our Black community. If you remember when you called in, I addressed you as either brother or sister, and the reason we address one another as such is to show you respect and to create and as a sign of solidarity. During these calls, we do not like to discuss religion, we don't like to discuss the Black male and female dynamic, and we don't like to discuss political party affiliation. We can discuss politics as it relates to Black people in America and how we can use it to improve our situation, but we don't want to get into a discussion about which party did this and which party didn't do that. The reason we don't discuss these topics is because they are all opinion-based, which means no one is right and no one is wrong. We'll be here arguing all night, going around and around in circles. So for all the guests on this call, let me just tell you a little bit about what Black Wallets Matter is. Black Wallets Matter is a member association comprised of brothers and sisters that believe the only way we're going to solve the problems in our Black community is if we do it ourselves and we start using the power of the Black dollars we already have. Last year, it was estimated we spent $1.3 trillion. Don't know what the number is going to be this year, but most likely the trend has been going up. So if we spent $1.3 trillion in 2017, we're probably going to spend that was 2016. So they're going to calculate the numbers. We probably spent $1.5 last year. That's trillion with a T. If we were able to pool our resources, if we were able to pull just a little bit of that money and put it in practice group economics and put it to good use to solve some of the problems that we have, we would have a major financial impact on this country. And we would be able to have a major impact on the plight of our situation here in America as Black men and women. This is a form of Black capitalism. Last year I was talking about Black capitalism, and I thought this was, I thought this was like a revelation, something that I had, that came to me. But they were talking about Black capitalism back in the 60s. I believe it was LBJ and Nixon. They were talking about forming Black capitalism as a way to stem the tide. That's when they had that great war on poverty. And, as times change, as the American economy became more focused on consumerism and stopped focusing on production and, manufacturing and production, and more about, the banking system playing shell games with the money, the American economy has been hurt, but we have been hurt 5-10 times worse. And that's because we never instituted or solidified our Black capitalism, right? You may have your feelings about that. You may be into socialism. You may be into some other kind of way of thinking. But capitalism is the system that we have here in America. And if we try to focus on implementing any other system, it's just going to be a waste of time, energy, and resources. We're going to be working against the current. We need to go into the flow of the current. We need to go into the flow of the American economy and figure out ways to pull out the money that we need to take care of our problems. That's what every other ethnic group that has infiltrated our communities, that is what they have done. Those models exist. And we look at the Asians and we look at the Arabs. They have come into our communities and they siphon the money out of our communities and send it back to God knows what country to do God knows what. But we definitely know that that money is not being used to improve the conditions of our people. So usually when we, usually when we start thinking about the problems here, right, we all can name probably hundreds, probably thousands, right? So we can say drugs, we can say the poverty, we can say the unemployment, and we can say the violence, right? We have tons and tons of different things. It becomes overwhelming if you try to attack every single problem individually. The amount of resources that you need to allocate to do an effective job, it becomes a mess. And so what this organization has realized is that at the essence of all the problems, one, you have to have money. You can say you want to do whatever it is you want to do, the problem of unemployment. Well, that's creating jobs. And if we don't have the money to create businesses or whatever, then we can't create any jobs. If we say we want to talk about stemming the tide of violence, right? Well, most of us, we know people in that lifestyle. We know a lot of times it's because they don't have jobs or because they don't have proper education or whatever. In order to implement one of those systems, we need money, right? We have to give them outlets and we have to give them opportunities. In terms of some of the negative behavior and negative outlook we have, many of us are familiar with the Willie Lynch letter. Right? So we're familiar with how supposedly the distrust that we have and the infighting and harping on our differences, right? So many of us are familiar how that is supposed to have come about, whether it's factual or not. The bottom line is it represents our current behavior. And the way we can realistically solve that problem is by focusing on the babies, right? If we take these really young babies, I don't know any other way to call them children. I'm talking 5, 6, 7, 8, before they get a chance to learn bad habits. So maybe 12, 13 is probably where 16, maybe that's where we would cut off, right? If we were to take those children and redefine what it means to be black, redefine the culture, teach them the opposite of some of the bad habits that we have, teach them some of the good habits that we grew up like. So if some of us were, raised in the 70s and the early 80s or whatever, you guys remember when we had that community vibe, when it took a village, when each one reached back to teach one and all of that stuff. And we had responsibility, not only for our family, but for the people next to us. If we could go back and we are to raise these children that way, they will grow up and they will teach their children. And we won't, and we teach them using drugs is only going to harm the body, it's only going to harm your family, it's only going to cause discord to your community. If we teach them to address one another with respect, as we're doing now, calling each other brother and sister, maybe mister, maybe ma'am, back how it used to be back in the days when you address an adult, you don't call, you would call Miss Pat, you don't call her Pat, you're a little kid. So we have to go back and we have to enforce those cultural values, right? And in addition to that, we need to start analyzing and understanding their aptitude. If we have children who are exceptionally gifted in academia and reading and things like that, well, then we need to create opportunities and outlets for those children. And if we see children who are really good with their hands and putting things together, tinkerers, we need to have outlets for those children to be inventors and tinkerers and things like that. All these things require resources and allocation of resources. We also need to start shaping career paths because other ethnic groups, they do that for their children. When I was on vacation this holiday, I was in South Carolina. the gas station, like two blocks away from my father's house. The lady in is a white lady. She owns the gas station, and she had her son in there at the counter, you know, collecting the money. Dude was like 7 years old, and she was sitting there and just teaching him step by step by step. And I'm watching him. I'm like, yeah. She's like, well, you know, you gotta train him when you're young. This is gonna be his someday. I was like, yeah, that's how you do it. That's how you do it. Everybody else, I thought back what's going on at the house where we at. I have a kid sitting there playing video games, rolling around on the floor. This little dude is at work. He's 7. So those are the types of things that we need to create, right? So, I mean, we don't have the gas station, the convenience store. So we need to acquire these assets in order to be able to raise these children with these skills, right? That will eradicate a lot of the negative behavior that we have. Then the next thing, right, we have to recognize that the powers that be, this country, it has a history of racism and oppression and oppressing us specifically. So what we need, in addition to providing those resources for these children, we need political protections for these children. And that comes in with the lawyers and the lobbyists that we talk about in our blueprint. If you pay attention to how the political game is played, it requires a lot of money. But really what it is, it's being shaped. Our political landscape is being shaped by corporations, by businesses. And so we need to start formulating these businesses. We need to start forming businesses so that we are able to work within the flow that the U.S. Political system understands. Once we have those political protections in place, then we can flourish as a people. We're not going to operate outside of the system as long as we stay here in America. It's just not going to happen. They have us boxed in. We have to pay taxes. We have to pay tolls. It's everywhere. They collect the money from us in so many different ways. It's not even funny, and they use it against us. So we need to figure out a way to start collecting that revenue from our people, from their people, and using it for our purposes. And that's what Black Wallets Matter is about in a nutshell. It is about using existing revenue sources, using our existing behavior and spending patterns, and using that to create these opportunities for these children and put in these political protections. That is the ultimate goal. That is how we are going to change our plight here in America. Now, it's going to take a lot of money. It's going to take some time. And so, as I said, I said this on other calls, and I'm saying this now, the only vehicle I know that we can get sustainable funding is through business. That's it. That's the only way where we're going to be able to get a constant stream of income coming in is by providing value to someone in exchange for revenue, in exchange for currency, and cryptocurrency, some people are talking about now. But once we set up those systems, then we can basically write our own ticket. And America respects commerce. America respects business. A lot of people are concerned, thinking that, okay, well, once we have this, they're gonna do us like how we did Black Wall Street, and they're gonna do it. What we have now is technology. We're able to create distributed networks of businesses. So the brother Derek was talking about, another brother who had who started a trucking company, and I believe that's in Alabama. And I know another brother who has a trucking company over in Chicago. Well, if those brothers were to come together and start sharing loads or brokering loads or something like that, that's a distributed network. It's not like they can just come to like one place like Tulsa, Oklahoma, and burn their business down. And so we need to start leveraging some of the resources and some of the opportunities that we have in this world, in this day and time. We're not the old models of us all getting together and being easily identified and targeted and things like that. We can avoid all of that. Take this call right here. We're all from all over the country. Where are you going to pinpoint us? You would have to go around and, I mean, what, we got about maybe 50 people in. So you got to go to 50 different places to target us. This is the benefit of leveraging technology. And so that's what Black Wallace Matter wants to do. We want to bring together these brothers and sisters from all over, and we want to form this member association. This member association will create the seeds that we need to create these businesses. The businesses can't be traditional businesses like, you know, a couple of entrepreneurs put up some money, and now as that business is bringing in profit, they take the profit and they put it in their pocket. That's not going to help our community. We need to use a collective pool of money to create a business that where the profits will be reinvested back into those communities. That's the only way it's going to work. That's what our community doesn't have that other communities have. They're entrepreneurs, they're business people, they make money, and then they take it and they reinvest it. And they, you know, usually it goes into like a church, a synagogue, or they have like some type of other communal structure where they all come together, and maybe the church or the mosque or the synagogue or whatever it is, that becomes the focal point of distributing money. If they don't have their own banks. So, you know, if we talk about the Jewish community, they have their own banks. But if you look at, like, the Asians and you look at the Arabs, their churches or their communal institutions distribute money and distribute loans. And so, you know, we have Black churches. If you have a strong relationship with your Black church, if your church reinvests money back into the community, then maybe we need to network with them, because that's an institution that our people immediately identify or recognize. But if we can't work with any, then we have to form our own. So, tell you about this membership organization we have. Membership dues start at $10 for the silver level. It's $25 at the gold level and $50 at the platinum level. That is a very small amount of money for most people. And what we want to do with that money is bootstrap and create a business, create something small that can give us more money so that we can buy larger businesses. And when I say larger businesses, I mean supermarket chains, transportation companies, things like that, where we can employ hundreds or even thousands of our brothers and sisters. We are looking for 2,000 founding members to help us get this snowball off the ground. This is not going to be for everyone, because some people either don't have the finances, or they don't believe in the vision. They don't believe something like this can work. But this is the only way that we are going to be able to create something of value for our people, because it's the only model that works in this oppressive American society. Other ethnic groups are proving that it works. They're doing it. Just go to your corners. Most likely the corner store in your area is owned by an Arab dude. The 7-Eleven is owned by an Indian dude. The beauty supply store is owned by an Asian person. So that right there is proof that this model works. They don't care about the racism going on in America. They don't care about, you know, being blocked out of the banking system or whatever is going on. They're just making it happen. And that's what we have to do. This message is not going to resonate with all 42 million of our brothers and sisters. That's as many Black people as there is here in America. We're hoping that it resonates with 2%, which would be 1 million brothers and sisters. But there is going to have to be a core group of us that create this proof element. We're going to have to create something for them to look at and then say, oh, okay, yes, it's working. Even no matter how small it is, we have to create it. We have to start somewhere, and then we can just start growing from there, growing and growing and growing from there. So I'm not going to belabor that point. That is what this organization is about in a nutshell. I'll open the call up for Q&A. You can press *6 on your phone if you have any questions in regards to what I'm discussing tonight. And then once we finish with Q&A, then we'll just open it up. If anyone has some solutions or some ideas that they have, something that they're implementing in their local area, then by all means, we would love to hear about it. Really, that's what we're, you know, so this year we're going to be focusing on empowering individuals to do things in their local community. So when you get in the queue and you start talking about solutions, think about something that you can do in your local community that would start creating change, that will create a snowball effect. And, you know, chances are we have someone who lives in your area. We can possibly link you up with someone, and maybe now you have partners to actually start creating change. So, you know, that's what our mission is going to be for this year, to try to have as many people and as many pockets across the country creating change for their, you know, for their local communities. So let me put it. And you can press star 6. Hold on for a second. We have a few callers. Caller from 814. I didn't get a chance to get your name. Caller from 814, your first name, please. Caller 814-288, your first name, please. Hello? You're in the queue, caller. Okay.
Hello?
Yes.
Yeah, this is DeWin in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. How y'all doing?
Peace, brother. Hold on, brother. I just messed your whole name up. I'm sorry, brother. Hold on. Okay. All right, brother. What's going on?
Man, this is my first time on the call. I was running a little late. That 9 o'clock hour got past me.
Okay.
I'm just listening in right now. I just wanted to tune in and things of that nature. And you know, my city is represented.
Okay. All right, thank you so much, brother.
All right, peace.
And brother Derek.
Hello,
brother Derek. Yes.
Hey, what's up, Lou?
Peace, brother.
First and foremost, let me take a second for everyone and brag on Brother Lou. Our initial conversation happened maybe 4 or 5 months ago. We learned a lot about each other. I learned a lot about Black Wallace Matter. And I participated in, I think this is my third call, and this call is going to be the call that solidifies my membership. I'm going to go ahead and join. And the reason being, over the course of these last few months, I've seen the growth in not only everything around me, but myself, and I've also seen the growth in Black people, period. And to see somebody like Brother Lou leading the charge, not just saying, hey, I'm going to change what's going on in my city. I'm about to make a move that's going to be able to shake some ground in, like you said, 50 different places all at once. And when you said that about your guy with the trucking company and my guy with the trucking company, and the potential collaboration, and then if you expand on that, and I think the last call, one guy was from Oakland, some people he may know with trucking companies, and just various businesses. So that, my friend, is exactly what I want to be a part of, and me and my fiance are going to join tonight. But what I really wanted to ask, and I was hoping that some people here could maybe give me some feedback, because we are currently opening our first business. And we're literally about 2 weeks from opening the Renaissance Center. It's basically a cultural arts center. And we're going to be able to employ people. We're going to be able to, you know, plant that seed, like Brother Lou said, because that's going to help, you know, we're going to reach them early and try to coax those personalities or whatnot. But I'm seeing an influx of Black businesses all over the country. And I'm seeing a couple of bookstores open that Black people are waking up. So if there's anything that you all can offer us, we both are here on speakerphone now, that we maybe can implement here in Tuscaloosa to drive employment, to to not only get pay them money, show them how to spend their money with financial literacy courses, trade courses, like Lou said, as far as if they're good with their hands. We want to take this place and turn it into that. So, you know, with that being said, you know, I'll fall back and, you know, whatever y'all suggest, we're all ears.
Well, all right. So I was speaking with a sister about that earlier. One of the things she said was that there are community centers community colleges that have these courses, but they're poorly marketed and they're usually far away from, from the urban areas and things like that. So what she was saying is that we could reach out to them, find out like what kind of courses. So let's say they have automotive repair and welding where you are, right? So we would find those courses, we will work with them and send them students. They may be able to pay you a referral fee for every student that gets enrolled, and then they have federal money to actually pay for those students. So the students go there free, and then your organization or, you know, your company gets to earn the referral fee. And so basically you would become an incubator or a feeder for that program. And I mean, could you imagine the impact that you would create in your community when you're sitting there taking guys who may have doing nothing and then turn them into mechanics making $75,000, $80,000 a year, or welders making, you know, $80,000 or $50,000 or whatever. I don't know what welders make, but I'm just saying, you got some young brothers or, you know, sisters or whoever that probably would have wound up on the streets or on social services or whatever it is, and you have them employed. That's going to brighten the outlook and the reputation and grow the reputation of your company in Tuscaloosa. So it's something to look into. The sister is sending me a little bit more information. When she sends it to me, I'll be sure to forward it to you. If it doesn't apply where you are, then, we can have a discussion behind the scenes. And you know what's so funny? I speak to a lot of brothers. Yes, brother, we had quite an interesting conversation. But I'm glad you're checking us out. You see, so I'm glad.
I respect you, bro. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. Even though we had our differences, you said the things that were hitting the buttons that, I mean, even though I disagree with a lot of what you said, the thing that you said that resonated the most, like, you like, look, bro, it don't matter. You going left, I'm going right. We're both trying to get our people straight. You know what I'm saying?
Exactly. Yeah.
And
that's
it. Period. That's it.
Yeah. And you got a lot of fire in your belly, and you want to get your people together. You want to get the people together. So, brother, I commend you for that.
You saw what we did at Roy Moore in Alabama, right? We did that. The black girl, baby, that's what we meant. We did that.
I'll be salute, man. I take my hat off to you, brother.
I'm behind you 100%, fam. I'm with you.
Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. We got a few more people in the queue. Like I said, as soon as the sister gets that information to me, I'll get it over to you.
Good looking out.
All right, peace. Sister Cynthia. Sister Cynthia?
Thank you, everyone, for giving me the opportunity to speak. I want to let you all know that this is my first call. I've been watching the organization and reading the emails, and I'm going to make a donation. I'm going to make a donation because anybody who cares enough about our people to start the interaction deserves that. And I salute you for that, Brother Luke. But as you were talking, I was making notes. And one of the things that my family is dedicated to, first of all, we come from Columbus, Ohio. We have children who live in and who have attended Tuskegee, Morehouse, Tennessee State. So we believe in our people, and we believe in educating our own. And so as I was taking notes, one of the things that you discussed was money. And I would like to say money is very important, but if you have land and you can plant and you can grow your own food, we need to start with the basics, and that's what we're trying to do. And I love hearing that they're truckers, because our goal, my family's goal, is to create food, healthy food. I live now in Washington, D.C. I went from Ohio to D.C., so we're kind of all over the place as a family. And I'm glad to be a part of this whole family. In terms of eradicating the negative behavior, I started a school. I ran it for 10 years. It was a charter school.
Okay.
And our brother Umar, who I salute, because one of the things that I learned after running a school and starting a school from scratch was that we can take our children and we can educate them, but if they're still returning to the environment that is not healthy for them, then we do need to do some investing in having live-in schools. We need boarding schools because some of our children cannot make it in our inner city. I look at the news every day here in D.C., in Columbus, Ohio, just everywhere, even on our college campuses, and the violence is rampant. So we have to definitely start re-educating our children. We have to feed them healthy food. We have to re-educate them. So the plan that we have, and hopefully together we can grow, is to educate and to feed our children. And to begin to erase some of the negative things that they're being taught. And I want to say I'm not political. In terms of not getting political, truly, you know, we have a lot of things up against us in terms of we do have a lot of people in our neighborhood. If I go around the corner right now, I'm going into a corner store that doesn't belong to us. So we have to, you know, as a people, begin to understand that nobody is going to fix this, as you said, but us. So everything that you said, I have no disagreement. But I will say that in terms of money, think about wealth. We don't necessarily, we may not be able to do transactions in currency, but if you have a department, if you are transporting goods, and I have goods that need to be transported, then we can make something happen. We have to start thinking up in those terms. Our currency, yeah, you have Bitcoin, but we could have made our own currency. And I have invested a little bit in Bitcoin, and I'm watching it, but we have to diversify. That's what I constantly try to tell my nonprofit board. Like I said, I'm not going to take up any more time. I'm just glad to be here. I think that we have all the tools that we need as a people to eradicate everything that we're coming up against. Now in D.C., I do work for corporate America. I can get what I was giving out, but I can also reinvest that now back into our community, and I'm looking forward to doing that. But I will tell you, Brother Lou, transparency is very important. I learned that in running a nonprofit, a charter school. You have to have all your books need to be out there so the people know where their money is going. I'm going to give mine anyway, and I trust that you will do what needs to be done with that money to make us stronger and better as a people. That's all I have to say.
Thank you so much, sister, for that. You have some insights. So normally during the calls, I go into, you know, I explain. So we provide full financial transparency with the organization. So, you know, if you make a one-time contribution, it's different. If you become a member, though, you log in the members area, you can see the books. Basically, you can see what's going on with the organization. So you know, I normally mention that, but I looked on the call. We have a few people. We have a lot of people who have returned. So they've heard me say this all the time. And really, like, where we are right now at this point in the organization, we're not even really worried about trying to convince people anymore, right? So I'm not really trying to say anything that isn't true. I'm not trying to dazzle anyone, because what I realize is if we don't have people who are truly committed, like, from their core and really understand what we're doing, it's not going to work anyway. We've been at this, you know, week in, week out. We speak to different types of people. I mean, tens of thousands. I speak to people, you know, I have a large data set. I've spoken to literally tens of thousands of different people, and I'm able to really gauge where our minds are as a collective, as a people, and I'm able to see the bright spots. I'm able to see the challenges and things like that. So you know, in regards to the finances and how, you know, this organization, you know, we provide that transparency. I do understand you're new, you just come on, but, you know, we've been going at this for a little while. And then the amount of money that we're asking is really small. It's like minute. But, you know, like I said, you'll see that later. In terms of us having our, you know, in terms of us providing those protections and those places for those children, again, I didn't really fully explain about what shape those entities would take, but they would be community resource centers. And these community resource centers would provide safe places for these children to go after school, because, you know, so that they're not just hanging out on the streets, and they would be able to come and learn, so get help with homework after school, and then also maybe learn like some self-defense training and maybe learn some computer programming and things like that. And really the purpose of that in some of the more at-risk communities is to really have less time for the child to be at home where there may be no guidance or structure, and have them in a structured environment where they're receiving the love, the nurture, the attention that they need. If we need to provide meals for these children at that time, then that's what we will do. If we need to provide, you know, uniforms or clothing or whatever it is, you know, I'm fully of the mind that that is what's going to have to be necessary. That's what that community resource center is going to have to do, because we want multiple millions of young black men and women growing up with a true identity of what it means to be black, a revised culture growing up. And so what happens is, because you'll have pockets of young men and women growing up in New York and in Philly and in Atlanta and Dallas and Houston and, you know, L.A., right, when they meet, when they cross paths, because this world is so interconnected now, they'll start having that same proper upbringing. And then that will create that mushroom, that snowball effect of, you know, people are just looking at black people differently. We're carrying ourselves with respect, dignity. We're on top of our business. We are focused on building our wealth. And, you know, we have the financial literacy training and the opportunities and all the other things that some of the other groups have. And we're just taking care of business. So, you know, that's the overall vision. That's the overall plan. But you can go on the website, it's blackwalletsmatter.org, and you can look at the video. It says Blueprint, and it explains soup to nuts what this organization is about and how we intend, how we plan on achieving our goals. All right, sister?
Yes, indeed.
All right, thank you so much. Next, we have Sister Geraldine in the queue.
Hello?
Yes, sister, how are you?
Hi, how are you again tonight? My name is Geraldine, and I'd like to say much respect to all your callers. And I'd like to ask you, what kind of turnout did you have tonight? Was it good?
Yeah, today, yeah, this was great. Great to just kick the New Year's off right.
I mean, the people, the number of people that you have, was it a good turnout according to the number of people?
Oh, well, I mean, well, before we used to have, like, you know, maybe like about 100 people coming on the call, but then the calls get unmanageable. So we have about 50-something a night. So this is good. This is manageable.
Good, good, good. Okay, and I like what everybody said, especially the young lady. And what I'm going to do is open a home for children, and mine will be faith-based. But I don't have anything else to say. I just enjoy what I'm hearing, and I'm in total agreement, and I just want to say much respect, and that's the biggest thing that we have with each other, respect. So that's what I'll leave you as.
Okay, thank you so much, Sister Geraldine. Okay, and next we have Brother Leonard. Peace, brother.
Hey, how you doing, Lou?
All right, all right.
Yeah, my brother. And how's everybody else on the call as well? I hope everybody had a safe New Year and coming up with some new concepts and philosophies. What I do want to share with everyone that's on the call, this is a call to the nation. So as I listen to all of the different individuals speak on the call, you have something to offer. You have a skill set. And we're at a point now, because we're in a crisis with our own people, we don't have an option. We have to help. And you can hear the love in everybody's voice. I think that everybody collectively should join. We don't really have an option. And as the brother and the sister said, applauding Lou for taking a leadership role, because we can all do something separately, but it's nothing like collective. And that's the culture that we need to create in order for us to be successful. And having said that, with all the people that are on this call, and if you think about all the brothers and sisters that you know that are educated, they have a skill set, they've been successful, there's no reason why we should be in this predicament. And until we start to trust each other and understand that we have an obligation, and even if we just follow the basic principles of Kwanzaa every day, you don't have to talk to me, but if you follow the basic principles of Kwanzaa, the seven principles, this thing will come to light. But we do need someone like Lou. There's a lot of us out here that are similar, but what you're doing, brother, you just keep doing it, but you can't do it alone. We have to bring all of the tribes together, and that's all I got to say.
Thank you so much, brother. I appreciate that. Sister Nicole, how are you, sister?
I'm fine. Thank you, sir. This is my first time on the call. I've been getting the emails about the calls, but I always realize that I missed it like a whole day later. But I'm grateful to be on the call tonight.
And then you saw the New Year's off right. Good. You're on top of things for the New Year's. That's what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah. I actually bought a planner and wrote it down. So I look at that planner several times a day so I can keep on top of it, because to put stuff on my phone doesn't make sense. Although I'm young, I still don't really put everything on my phone, because I don't like looking at my phone half the time. So putting it on a planner makes it easier. Okay. Put it in writing. But nonetheless, in my neighborhood, I actually live in Chicago. We moved to Evanston, Illinois, right outside of Chicago, from New York.
Okay.
So in the neighborhood that I live in, I noticed that a lot of our young girls, oh, I see it everywhere, but I see it more so in the neighborhood that I'm in, that these young girls feel like they have to twerk and all the negative things in order to get attention from guys. And then you look at the parents that they come from, and it almost makes sense why they feel like that. And
right.
The organization that I wanted to start is called the Princess Project. And it's all on paper now. I'm still trying to get the business plan together so that I can actually present it to people. But for the most part, I want to change the image that our young girls see themselves in, or the light that they see themselves in. Instead of them just looking at the negativity around them, get them while they're young, at least like in elementary school age, and expose them to things outside of the neighborhood so that they have more to aspire to be and more to reach for later on. So for
Absolutely.
The most part, the whole gist of what it is that I'm going to be doing is teaching them how to make vision boards and how to plan for their future and start thinking about what they want to be later on, because white people do it. They teach the kids what they should be, or even dictate to them what they should be from when they're kids. Why can't we do the same thing, but at least giving our kids options outside of the music industry, outside of sports, you know, outside of
Absolutely.
The typical
I said absolutely. I'm 100% in agreement. We don't need any more entertainers. We don't need any more sports. We need engineers. We need scientists. We need mathematicians. Yep. We need That's what we need. Businessmen, bankers. Yeah.
Absolutely. And I want to have them in the day in the life of is one of the segments of the program where they would be shadowing a person in a different career path, but it would be either a black woman or a black male so that they can actually see, okay, this is something that I can be. It's something beyond BET and all the videos. They can actually be something outside of that. I know a few doctors that I linked up with because I actually work at one of the local hospitals, so I actually spoke with a couple of the doctors, and they're game. They're all for it. There's just a few more other people that I want to get on board, like an accountant. I want to get someone who does financial planning, someone in all aspects so that these girls can be exposed to so much more so they know, at least get an idea of what they want to aspire to be later on. I just don't know how to – I don't know how to present it. There's a local organization near where I live. It's like it's a community center. So I thought about just having it kind of hand in hand with their after school program. Just come in one day of the week and gather the girls and have sessions with them and kind of build from there. Because I want to officially have it as like a yearly thing, like something that goes throughout the whole year.
I'll tell you two things. So we have a few sisters who will be launching. So the sisters will have, like, their own night where other sisters can get together and have a call. So it'll be a call like this, but it'll be for the sisters only. That may be something that you probably would be interested in. And there are some accomplished sisters that are spearheading that group. And so they would definitely be able to give you a little bit more input. Sister Shauna, Sister Amber, and another Sister Clarice, I believe, are going to be spearheading those calls. So you can definitely share that with them, and then maybe they have some resources to help you, or you guys could collaborate and come up with something. In terms of actually initiating this thing, what I want to say to you is don't overthink it. So I hear you, I got it on paper, and I got the business plan. No, the first thing you should worry about is what will be the first lesson. Figure out what that first class will be. See if you can get that community center and see if you can get some kids into that community center, because that's essentially what your business is going to be. It's going to be creating these programs and things for the children, and then when they get in there, you'll basically be able to gauge their, because if you plan it out on paper and you sound like you're really organized, you may plan a whole lot of different things, but when you actually go in and start interacting and having fun with those girls, a lot of that stuff may go out the window. You may need to just start off with, like you said, a vision board. A vision board is excellent. So you could go in and you say, okay, now listen, we're going to get some pictures off the internet. We're going to get some pictures out of a magazine. What kind of careers that you guys know about outside of being Beyonce or being an entertainer or a sports player? What are some other careers where people can make, good money or whatever? And then you would find out from those girls. And now you would be able to create, someone says a doctor. Well, what kind of doctors? Do you know what different types of doctors? And they would surprise you. They will surprise you with some of the things that come out of their mouth, and then you're able to feed off of them, that energy. And then because it's so engaging, they're going to find value in it, and then they're going to want to come back, and then you can build like that. So just do the first one. Just do the first one and just get it rolling.
Okay.
That's the best advice I can give you. All right,
man,
sister.
Beautiful advice. Thank you so much.
Yep. Okay. Next we have Brother George. Brother George.
Hey, good evening, Brother Lou.
Peace, brother. How are you?
Peace and peace to everybody that's on the line. I'm doing well. Happy New Year, everybody. I wanted to just present a notion to you and the group. And if it's for you, fine. If not, that I also can respect that. But I'd like to posit that the other side of this coin is, let's see, how best do I say this? It's easy to know what the problem is, but a large part of the solution is addressing the why. And the reason I'm coming from this perspective is in my work as a mental health therapist, I deal with clients, and my role is to get them from point A to point B in an effective manner to help them adjust their mindset to be more effective in their achieving their goals. So I'd like to just present to everybody for consideration that we have a what problem, but I think the why behind it is a mental conditioning issue. And in your opening, I got four really important points out of your opening, which was economic collaboration, teaching our babies, shaping our career paths, and establishing a political and an influential political presence as a community. So I just want to challenge everybody to think, you know, not only look at the what, but look at the why. Why aren't we in 2017 economically collaborative? Why in 2017 are we still sending our children to Eurocentric schools to educate them about us? Why are we still reactive in the areas of employment and entrepreneurship rather than owning and controlling our economic destinies? And why are we still ineffective politically? And so I just wanted to throw that out there. Brother Lou, we talked earlier. I was going to send you some information because I do believe in my work I'm doing, I've developed some solutions to address the why. And I want to share that information with you privately. And if it's something that you think that you might want to entertain in terms of making it a part of this initiative, because I really am strong support. Everything that you're saying, everything in your blueprint, is exactly what we need to do. It's not rocket science, as you said before. However, our issue as a community is the mentality behind it and why we are still struggling with these really basic life-building concepts right now. So that's my piece.
Okay, well, there's no argument there. We all know that there's underlying principles. We know this, the mentality, this, I call it poor behavior, but a lot of it is poor conditioning. I'm curious to see what kind of information you have on that, because that definitely would be able to shed some light. I think a lot of the problems, off the top of my head, I think a lot of the problems that we're suffering from currently stem from the crack epidemic. I'm serious, because we're not human. It's like we're crazy. And we weren't like this. When I was a kid, we weren't like this as a people. I'm serious. Where we are now, it doesn't make sense if you're on the outside of the community, but if you saw how, once loving, attentive parents, started smoking crack and just wind up lost their mind and no longer cared about the kid, and now the kid has to go live with the grandmother and he's hyperactive, the grandmother can only do but so much. And now he becomes an adult, and then he has a baby, which are these new generation kids. He wasn't raised right. He doesn't know how to raise the kid right. And so now you got, how they say you got babies raising babies. You got babies who had no proper home training raising other babies. And, now you have mothers who are more like home girls with their kids and fathers who either are absent or, I don't even know what to describe. Some of the things that I see like blow my mind, and it was not like that when I grew up. And I mean, we're still black folks. And if people want to say, oh, well, because of slavery, well, technically the people from in the earlier years, from the 50s, 60s, and 70s, they're closer to slavery than we are now. So that, I don't buy that one. But I do think it's the drugs. I really think the drugs, because that crack epidemic caused so much mistrust within our community, and it literally broke that. It takes a village. It broke the village. I watched it because I grew up partially in a village, and then like after 89, the village was gone.
So the question, because I agree with what you're saying. The question that I would propose to everybody on that is, was it really a village then if it was destroyed? Because if we're going to create a new village, we want to create a village that will not be vulnerable to those attacks, like the drugs or incarceration or juvenile statistics or lack of employment. There's so many different ways to come at a strong community. And so the question would be, did we really have a strong community?
Oh, well, I can't really comment on it. I can say, though, that most of the knuckleheads that grew up at my time were not as bad as what's going on now. Like, we have home training. We have proper home training, you know, things like that. So I'm curious to see what information you have, brother. It sounds good, and we definitely need to have that powwow. All right?
Right on. Right on.
All right, brother. Thank you. Okay, next we have Brother Jahan. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, brother. Brother Jahan, right?
Yes,
is that how
you
pronounce
it?
Okay.
Yes, sir. Jahan Mansour.
Right. I know you have a beautiful name, brother. It sounds French. It sounds like something you would say to a woman when you're trying to flatter her. Jahan Mansour. I love that. All right, guys, brother.
Well, I appreciate that. It's an Islamic name, and Jahan means leader.
Okay.
Mansour means one that has been made victorious by Almighty God. So
okay,
it has not only beauty and sound, but meaning and in providing aspiration and inspiration, and it is one of the reasons why I can just applaud the tremendous work that you are doing and the tremendous work that the brothers and sisters who are joining in are doing. And I'm blessed at this point in time to kind of introduce myself and share with you a blessing that Almighty God has revealed to me. Now, let me give you just a little background. Again, my name is Jahan Mansour. I serve as the chairman and founder of Silicon Valley Africa India Inc. Incorporated. The acronym is SVAI. Our website is SVAI.com. Now, what we have been blessed with is an experience of over 50 years that God has blessed me as a survivor to be prepared to share with, I call you all my offspring, in the sense that we are all a part of a legacy. The reason that Almighty God has brought us here to America is for a divine purpose. Being raised in America, we all have been taught Christian values. And one of the things that we all have been taught from coast to coast is that God works in mysterious ways. We all have been taught God has worked in mysterious ways. And so we know that. We understand that. But what we haven't taught, and what I want to bring, is that not only does God work in mysterious ways, but he has given the human being, that's us, the ability to demystify those mysteries. And in demystifying those mysteries, that's the challenge that we are dealing with as we speak today, and the wonderful work that you all have done. Now, when we look at all of the concerns that have been expressed tonight, and that we face as a people, it boils down to three primary concerns. It boils down to one concern, and I'll break the concerns down in this fashion. The question is, white American oppression and black American victimization. And the question is, why do white people oppress us? By what means are we oppressed by them? And how may we end our oppression? And when we talk about why do they oppress us? And the question is, because they possess the power to do so. By what means are we oppressed? intellectually. We don't know who we are as a people. We don't know how we fit into this system. We don't know how to make this system work for us. That's from an intellectual perspective. We are oppressed politically. We have been bamboozled into believing that we can get help by a Democratic Party or Republican Party, only to find out the reality that neither one of them give a damn about us as a people. Economically, we have been reduced to a point of we are the poorest group of ethnic Americans in terms of our ability to control our resources. Now, the ability to make changes or to end that oppression is based on our ability to neutralize or balance or destroy this power differential, which favors this domination over us. Now, the blessing that we have is an ability to, again, be able to understand or demystify what's going on. And so the question, the most pressing question for us to demystify is, knowing that God works in mysterious ways and knowing that whatever God does always works out for the best, then the question is, what is the reason for God permitting President Donald Trump to be the president of the United States? Now, we have to understand that that is a part of the God's divine plan. Now, in demystifying it, what we have to look at is, okay, what does it mean? One of the things that it means is that what Donald Trump represents, and let me say up front so there'll be no misunderstanding here, I'm not an advocate of Donald Trump. I'm a truth teller. I'm sharing insights into what's going on so that we can begin to work from a knowledge base in terms of knowing how to address people. The only difference in people is knowledge. We have been miseducated as a people, and as a result, we tend to believe in Mother Goose and Mickey Mouse, and we don't have a true understanding of the reality of the system that we live in. But that being said, what we recognize with Donald Trump is that this man had been, God had permitted this man to come in, and he has disrupted the whole world. He's disrupted the United States, and he's disrupted the whole world. Now, what does this disruption mean as far as we, Americans of African descent, are concerned? Now, if you'll notice, I identified ourselves as Americans of African descent. And the reason for identifying ourselves as Americans of African descent is that in our country, people are grouped into four primary categories: European Americans, Asian Americans, African Americans, and Spanish speaking Americans. None of those people in those groups are homogeneous. They all have specific identities. However, when it comes down to African Americans, we've been lumped up into one homogeneous group. And the disadvantage that we have suffered from that is that by not being able to understand who we are as Americans of African descent, which means that we are the descendants. Our ancestors were the ones that went through slavery, went through emancipation, went through the civil rights movement, are into Black Lives Matter today, and all of that was for a divine reason, and that was to purify us as an ethnic American group to provide leadership to this chaos and confusion that we see in the world today. Now, we have to be able to begin to understand.
Wait, brother, you have some very, very interesting information. But we have a few people in the queue, and it seems like, you know, I don't know where you're going with it. It sounds interesting, but we have.
Let me close it up. With all due respect. Yeah. With all due respect, I appreciate that.
Well, actually, I mean, you can re explore the topic. Let's let the other people in the queue do that, and then, you know, I can give you the floor for a few minutes to talk about what you're saying. But remember,
let me summarize.
You know,
give me a summary here. I'll close it out, and then we can come back. What I'm saying is that God has blessed us with an unprecedented opportunity. Just before Christmas, Congress passed a Tax Cut and Jobs Act of 2017. That is a blessing for us as Americans of African descent. Now, the media have presented that as something for rich people, and it's a civil war that they are trying to promote. But the point that I'm making is that what we're doing here through this medium, through this session that you're holding, where we can come together and talk and learn, is how we will be able to come in unity together, pool our human, our intellectual, our material and capital resources in a harmonious, peaceful, and a cooperative manner, and then we will be able to develop a economically viable, competitive community so that we can compete with other ethnic groups in our community. So I just say that in closing, we're talking about this act that was passed by Congress and what it means to us as a people and how it gives us an opportunity to become competitive with other ethnic groups. Thank you so much.
Okay, cool. Thank you, brother. All right. And that was 58 seconds exactly. So I want to circle back to that, though. So, you know, how can we actually use that to our advantage? And, you know, I'm familiar with your company, you know, with some of the things that you were talking about before. So, like I said, we'll just circle back. Let's just give the other people in the queue an opportunity. All right, brother?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Yep. Brother Dwayne, and then we have Sister Mike.
Peace. This is Brother Dwayne again in Pittsburgh.
Peace.
Can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
I'm like looking at the Black Wallace Matter Ambassador Program guidelines. Do I send you an email on setting forth establishing a chapter?
We're going to. So what happens with the ambassadorship program? Brother Cujo and Brother Will, they will be spearheading that initiative. We're going to revise it a little bit. So essentially, what we're going to be focusing on is just having people get together in their local area and just start doing something. So the ambassadorship guidelines are really stringent the way they're set up, and we've had some trouble with implementing it the way as it currently stands. So, but we don't want to be the bottleneck, or we don't want the organization or the guidelines to be the impediment, you know, for people taking action. So, so if you have the guidelines, if you're obviously a member, so you're able to log in the members area. When we have the members only call, you'll get the email. We'll let you know, and then we'll discuss it. I just have to, you know, have a powwow with Brother Cujo and Brother Will and see exactly how they want to formulate things going forward in the new year. Because that was a decision that we came up with towards the end of last year.
Okay.
All right. But you can look over it. It's pretty much like the idea that we have, though, right? So, you form the group, and then the chapter would go out and raise awareness of the organization, recruit local members, and then the money, the membership dues from that local membership would be used to create businesses, and you know, pretty much the same things that we're talking about doing on this macro level, you would be able to do it on the micro level, and start creating that change in your community. So that's essentially what, you know, what this organization is about, what we want people to do in their local communities. But you know, there's been challenges, and so we're trying to really identify what the bottlenecks are, remove the bottlenecks, and then let people move forward. You know?
Yes, sir.
All right. Thank you, brother.
You're welcome.
And we have Sister Mai. Hello, Sister? Sister Mai?
Hello?
Yes, Sister.
I was just talking, and I realized I was muted. So you didn't hear me, right?
No, I didn't. I'm sorry, I didn't.
Oh, okay. I was just saying my comic study really quick. I want to respond to something that one of your previous callers, I think her name was Cynthia, made. First of all, I want to commend you for the idea of changing our girls into princesses. And I just wanted to offer a possible resource to her, Williams Adley, LLP.
That wasn't Sister Cynthia. That was Sister Nicole.
Nicole, okay.
Yeah,
I apologize for getting the name wrong. But there's a black-owned accounting firm that they have several branches throughout the nation. And it's been in existence for about 40 years now, I believe. And my CPA in Oakland started there, and he's from Chicago. So I believe that was their home base where they founded the company. But just to offer that as a – I'm sure they would love to have some children come in and mirror, you know, them and talk to them, because they are just very prosperous and reputable black-owned and operated accounting firm. And that's Williams Adley. The second word is A-D-L-E-Y, and I'm pretty sure, like I said, they still have one in Chicago. No, they have one in D.C., Oakland.
Yes, sir.
Hold on.
How do you spell that last name again?
It's A-D-L-E-Y.
Okay.
And as always, I enjoy the call, Brother Lou, and the information you're putting out there and what you're aspiring to do and your passion that you have for our people and for all of the callers that are speaking up and engaging in the dialogue. I'm just much respect to everybody. Let's get it done.
Yes,
put money where our mouth is.
All right, sister. Okay, so let's see here. Where is the good brother? Sister Nicole, you have the information?
I'm sorry?
I said, do you have the information? You have what you need?
Yes, sir. I wrote it down.
Yep, great. Okay.
Thank you.
So we're going to go back to the good brother and find out how this. So good brother, Jahan.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so you said there was, so at Christmas time, before Congress, I guess, went on vacation, they passed the Jobs Act and what other act?
It's called the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. This is the big deal that was passed by the Trump administration this year. You know, there have been a number of attempts to deal with killing Obamacare and other things that they failed at doing. And they closed the year by getting this Tax Cuts and Job Act of 2017 signed. You can. Everybody needs to look it up so that you can have a frame of reference in terms of what I'm saying.
Right.
Now, it's important to understand the environment that we are in order to put things in a proper perspective. We are in our country is in effect a civil war. It's a war that's being fought by the Democrats and the Republicans. Now, let me underscore, when I say Democrats and Republicans, I don't mean us. I don't care what party we claim to belong to. This is about the 1% in both parties fighting for control of our nation. And the fight is very serious. The civil war is very serious. This is why you can see both parties being extremely wealthy. They're the 1%. And so they control news media outlets, such as CNN is for the Democrats. Fox News tend to be more for the Republicans. So you can see that both are heavily armed and fighting to the teeth. And the fight right now is to control our country. Now, what's important for us to understand in terms of where we are today, we have to go back to the election that was run in 2016. And what we find during that time is that it ended up with Donald Trump running against Hillary Clinton. Now, then we had a choice
of Tweedledee or Tweedledum. And we were being babies, neophytes, in terms of understanding the political game that's being played. We were told to choose a party, choose a color, red or blue. So we choose, most of us tend to operate from the Democratic position.
Brother, all right, so brother, I know this is not your first time on a call. We, you know, during the beginning of the call, I mentioned that we don't want to get into a discussion about the political parties and, you know, so all we care about is how we can use the politics to our advantage. So what I'm asking you directly, because now we have a few other people in the queue, and I want to, you know, respect those brothers. But what I'm saying, what I'm asking you directly is how does that Jobs Act and that Tax Reform Act, how does that benefit us directly as people of color here in America? How can we use that? What's in that, in those doctrines or in those documents that we can, that can be exploited? What loopholes are there? Because in 1913, right during the Christmas holiday, is when they passed that Federal Reserve Act, which is how we wound up getting these central banks, and everybody was asleep at the wheel. And now, you know, when we come into the new year, you know, you're no longer, you know, all the money is being ran through this banking cartel. So what I'm asking you directly is, what is in those documents that we can either exploit the loophole or whatever?
Yeah, very specifically, the documents, the law rather, is made to benefit corporations. The law has been passed to give corporations what is called personhood, the same ability to do unlimited things that the individual does. And so this new law has been designed so that corporations can get tremendous breaks for business opportunity. Now, what we're doing very specifically is looking at the fact that we have a trade deficit in the United States. This tax act is designed to bring investment money from abroad by giving these big people tax cuts, with the idea that the new money coming in will be able to finance economic development. Now, the economic development is designed to create growth by creating business or trade. What we understand and what we're doing here is recognizing that in 2000, Congress passed the African Growth and Opportunity Act. It identified 54 countries in sub-Saharan Africa that the United States identified as trading partners. These countries want to be trading partners with the United States. The idea of them becoming trading partners was so that we in the United States could get those natural resources and value add those natural resources here in America, revitalize America's economy in the 21st century, with trade becoming the new engine for growth in the 21st century. Now, that didn't happen because the following year was 9/11. And then it was 14 years later before we focused back on the African Growth and Opportunity Act. And that was when President Obama hosted the first ever U.S.-Africa summit in Washington, D.C.
Hold on, bro. I'm not trying to be rude, bro. We're going to have to – this is a conversation. This is circling, like, basically to the same conversation we had the last time when you were on the call.
Let me specific opportunity there. We have an opportunity to export. We have an oil exporting opportunity, and we also have a trade opportunity with African countries that want to benefit from the African Growth and Opportunity Act. We have some information on the website, and I'd be happy to talk to
brother, this is what I'm saying. We had this conversation already. So, you know, you don't have the specific trade set up. We've had this discussion already. I already investigated. I've spoken with you at length about this opportunity that you're, quote unquote, presenting. It's not fleshed out yet. You don't have.
It's fleshed out since we speak with you, since we had our last conversation.
Okay, so then we need to have a conversation behind the scenes then.
I look forward to it.
All right, then. Thank you.
Right. I look forward.
Brother CJ.
Hey, how you doing?
Peace, brother.
All right, so I was driving earlier. This is my first time on the call, and I just want to let you know that I appreciate what everything that's going on right now. So give me a couple minutes. I understand we need to abbreviate this. We need to not, you know, linger on. I understand that. First of all, I'm a carpenter, and I like helping people. I move people this, any other, right? I don't know if that's something that I hear everybody talking about themselves, right? You know, maybe that might help somebody, right? And also, I have two comments. I wanted to comment on drug use and on trust, on black people trusting each other. And the first thing I want to say about drug use is, and so, you know, sometimes people, they tend not to want to talk about their stuff, you know? And so for me, I'm in recovery, and I'm coming up on, in the end of the month, I'll have 5 years clean and sober, you know, and I'm proud of that. The thing is, with our people, sometimes the things that hinder us is nobody really knows who you are. They don't know where you're coming from, you know, and I might need help with something, but I don't want to tell the truth about myself. You know, not that you necessarily need to. I'm sure there are reasons, there are people with jobs that have a reason not to state what's going on with their life. Right, but if you want help, how are you going to get help if a person doesn't know what your problem is? You understand what I'm saying? And so I'm going to leave that there. But I you started talking about the crack and everything, you know, and that, to me, this is my own point of view. To me, right now, today, crack, methamphetamine, heroin, and for some people, weed. I mean, it is the thing that it's the new slavery. It is holding us back. You can't even keep your head on straight. You can't move forward because you're dealing with this drug issue, you know? And so it's something that we really need to, we need to talk about that. And so I'm going to leave that alone. And then the next thing I wanted to say was about money. And on my way out, I want to say this, as far as this is my first time on the call, and I'm so impressed with what I'm hearing. I'm going to be a supporter right now. So I'm not sure how it's done or whatever. I don't know if I give you my email or do it later, or I'm not sure how you got that set up, or you can talk to me later. So I want to support this call.
You can go to the website. It's blackwalletsmatter.org. Look up in the right-hand corner. There's a button that says menu. Click the menu button. And then there's a link where you can become a member or you can pledge a one-time support. So you'll see two links. If you look at that menu, and you can click either one of those, and you can make a contribution that way. And we thank you so much in advance, brother.
Okay, yeah, I'm gonna make a contribution, but I'm also gonna be a contributor. I mean, I want to be a supporter, right?
Okay, so you can become a member. So you want to click the button that says become a member.
Exactly. Okay, because you know, one-time thing is nice. But the thing here is our big problem, like I was saying, our big problem is trust. Nobody wants to trust anybody. And that's what's holding between that and drugs. Those are the two main things that are holding us back. You know, so, I mean, that's all I had to say. I just wanted to, I'm going to listen to the rest of the show. And this is, let me make sure I got this right,
blackwalletmatter.org.
Okay, I got it. All right. Happy New Year. God bless you, and I'll be listening.
Thank you so much, brother. Next, we have Brother Derek.
Hey, I just wanted to throw it. You asked about that new tax law and how it can benefit us. I actually read what I read, a few of the summarizations. And as far as individuals, as far as black people, I think most people being paid by the hour is not going to be that dramatic. But where we can make a big difference is with those LLCs and corporations like the guy was mentioning but didn't go into. But the tax write-off for LLCs, it's going to be something that, like, you don't have to be a billion-dollar corporation to be able to do that, to be able to benefit from that. So you'll be able to write off various things as far as expenses and employees. Now, you know, we're trying to hire people and do things like that. That tax plan will help us in that regard. But as black people in general, it's really not for us. But there, like you said, there are ways that we can benefit from it. That
you've always been able to write stuff off when you have a business. I mean, and we got Sister Shauna in the queue. There we go. So I'm glad. As a matter of fact, I don't even need to say anything. We have our resident tax professional. She's right here, so that way I ain't got to make a fool out of myself. She deals with this all the time. But to the point what the brother was saying in terms of corporations being able to be identified as people, they already did that. The Koch brothers, they lobbied really, really hard for this thing. It's called Citizens United. This was years ago. This is when you started seeing those super PACs where they used the 14th Amendment, and they basically have corporations recognized as individuals where they can give unlimited amounts of money to whichever candidate or multiple candidates that they want. And then there's a documentary on Netflix. It's called Citizen Koch, right? Citizen K-O-C-H. Not Koch. Their name is not Koch. Their name is Koch. But they it shows them actually putting this policy in place. It shows the manipulations that they're doing. A guy went in with a sneaky camera, and, you know, they had this million-dollar-a-plate-type dinner, and they're over there, and they're talking like, all right, listen, I need your money, and this is what I'm going to do with it. I'm going to give it to this candidate. I'm going to give it to this candidate. And I think they manipulated the elections in Wisconsin, I want to say, and they basically kicked out the union. And the reason why is because one of the Koch brothers' businesses is Georgia-Pacific, which is a paper manufacturing company. And they had the union, they got real high trades or whatever they got. It's just crazy. But these dudes are playing.
The next leg was that they were adding, like you said, with Citizen United. The next thing they're doing with that is going to make it legal now for these churches who are non-profit organizations to start backing politicians.
That goes
back to what you were saying. If the church is going to be on our team, then we definitely need to reach out locally to these churches who are, you know, giving job fairs and paying people's rent and doing those things to build us up. But if not, just like you say, once again, I mean,
we'll
it's not
–
right, exactly. You got the tax lady on, man. I really want to hear what she has to say.
I'm about to put it on right now.
Honestly, I just ain't want no boy to come in here trying to paint a picture and confuse everybody on the call. So I think you about to get somebody to straighten it all out.
Right. Here you go. Thank you, brother.
All right.
Sister Shauna. Hello?
Hey, brothers and sisters. How you doing? This is Shauna.
Peace, sister.
All right. So that's why I had to get in the queue. And I'm going to go specifically to taxes and try not to go on and on, because taxes is one of those things that you can kind of talk forever. So let me say the first thing is the new tax law does not take effect until 2018. So that's the first thing. It won't affect your 2017 taxes, so you can – whatever changes have been made, they won't actually affect you directly until next year, until you file 2018. That's first thing. The changes in the tax law do affect the regular layperson that has a W-2. But it's only temporary. It's only to 2025. So the things I'm going to tell you now, for the regular person that has a W-2 or 1099 income, with a couple of kids, right? This change only is effective until 2025. All right, so the child tax credit has officially doubled. So you used to get $1,000 for the child tax credit. I'm not talking about earned income credit. The child tax credit, that has went from $1,000 to $2,000. The personal exemption, there used to be a personal exemption about $4,000 for the individual person. That's completely wiped away. There is no personal exemption anymore. But what they did was increase the standard deduction by double. So if the standard, if you were single individual with kids, head of household, if it your deduction was $12,000, so exemption was $12,000, it's now $24,000. So all the standard deduction rates have effectively doubled, which is, I'm assuming, why they got rid of the tax exemption. Anybody that's doing any side work out of their home and were claiming, like, your house, you know, the square footage in your home, that's gone. Moving expenses are gone. Yep. Moving expenses.
Wait, you mean like saying like the 700 square foot or 1,000 square
right.
feet?
Right. You used to could claim up to 300 square feet of whatever square footage you have. You could claim up to 300 square feet. That's gone.
Really?
Yeah.
So what do you claim now?
Nothing. It's gone. Moving, and this is effective 2018 taxes, okay? Moving expenses, you may write off your gas, you may write off your expenses, but you may not write off your mileage.
What?
Yep.
For the, you mean the depreciation? You can't write that off?
No, you can write depreciation, but you can't write off mileage. So,
but you don't calculate it based on the mileage? Okay, go ahead.
No, depreciation and mileage are two separate line items. So you may depreciate your asset, your car, right? You can depreciate your car. You can depreciate your home. If you work out of your home, you may depreciate your home. You may depreciate your car. You may depreciate your computer. You may depreciate any asset that you use to work inside the home. However, you cannot claim the square footage of the home, and you may not claim the mileage. You can, however, claim the expenses of the car, gas, maintenance, oil change, and all that good stuff. All right. And so, if you have a good accountant, they'll know how to maximize that to where that mileage don't hurt you so bad. But I will say that mileage is going to hurt. It's going to hurt real bad for folks that that have a pretty high income and they use it to kind of offset some of those taxes. Folks that do 1099, that mileage is going to hurt them pretty bad. What else? For those of you that that live in a state that has no income tax, like the state of Texas, the state of Florida, Wyoming, and it's like four others that have no state income tax. You could write off the state and local taxes, like your sales taxes. Well, it's not gone, but it's capped at a dollar amount now. So it's capped at $10,000. So you could be able to claim, like, you buy a new car, some big equipment, and you could write off that sales tax. Well, you can't write it off on that Schedule A anymore. That's the same place that you claim your mortgage insurance, right? So you can't write that off anymore. And what I'll do, Brother Lou, is this information that I'm giving you is all readily available from C-SPAN website, from CNN Money website. I can send the link, and people can read it a bit further so they can have a general understanding. So I'm just kind of giving everybody the abridged version because, you know, tax law is, you know, lengthy and long-winded. What else? Now, good news, they have increased the tax credit. Now, individuals, like, let's say you're a single person, you have no children, you have no spouse, and it's just you. There used to be a very, very small earned income credit, $200-$300 that they would give you if you made under $15,000. They've increased that to $500 to $700. So you could get up to $700 or no more than $500 for being a single person with no children making under $15,000. For those that are in the higher income ranges, $70,000 for single individuals, $109,000 for married couples, you won't have to deal with the alternative minimum tax. They've moved the line. So you have to now make over $250,000 before you have to pay an alternative minimum tax. The mortgage interest deduction, this one is going to hurt as well. The mortgage interest deduction has been lowered. But, you know, if you don't own a property more than this, then I guess it won't affect you as much. If your property value is more than $500,000, they're going to limit you to a percentage that they have not outlined yet. So we don't know. Yeah. So if your property, and look, black folks own homes, $500,000 and above, that are, you know, upper middle class, basic middle class. And if you're in certain areas of the country, you know, $500,000 for a property ain't nothing. Like New York, I'm sure $500,000 is like, yeah, that's regular cost. But in places like where I am in Texas, in Houston, I mean, $500,000 is a grip. All right. Medical deductions, they're letting us keep it until 2025. After 2025, you will no longer be able to claim medical expenses.
What? What's a bull? All right, so let me ask you this. What's the angle? So they ain't do all of this for no reason. Who benefits? How we need to be set up? What we need to do to take advantage of this stuff? Or how do we need to be positioned? So do we need to be set up as a business and running every last single thing through the business, or like what?
Okay. So what I was addressing was the brother said that it doesn't really affect regular lay people. So all I did was just kind of go through what affects regular lay people. But this particular tax bill is really set up for investment. Okay? It's really set up for investment. So if you are investing in anything, be it real estate, be it businesses, and I'm talking like passive income when I say invest in business. If you're going into what else? I'm trying to give other examples of investments and things that
stock markets and stuff like that.
Yes, stock. Well, I'm talking about passive income, right? I'm talking specifically about investments as it relates to passive income, things that you don't get a W-2 or a 1099 for. We're talking about
like
capital
stock,
gains.
Yeah, like stock bonds, yeah, yep, uh-huh. Stock bonds, stuff like that, annuities.
Right. So this tax plan is really set up for people that are doing some type of investment because that's where all the tax breaks are. The capital gains tax has dropped to like 7%. Capital gains is at 7%. I'm looking at it.
So they're trying to stimulate. So you think they're trying to stimulate and keep this stock market boosted, artificially inflated? Because you know that's what they've been doing. Well, now I'm getting off on a tangent.
Well, I know. Well, if I had to say a conspiracy theory, I would say that there's something coming.
This is not a conspiracy. Look at the quantitative easing. Look at what's going on.
I agree.
Yeah.
I'm saying if I had to speculate, I would say that this tax plan is in preparation of something that is coming.
Okay.
That's what it is. It's being set up for investments that are coming. They know that there's going to be a huge market for investments. And they're trying to prepare the tax system for that particular, for those types of investments. So, you know, you and I talk a lot about it. We talk a lot about it on the call. And we talk about investing in our communities. We talk about just investing in our children, yada, yada, yada. But we got to read the tea leaves. The tea leaves, you know, we talked about that with cryptocurrency, right? We, you know, we wasn't listening, but now we are. Like, there is a pattern in the tax system. It's a pattern in the way that Republicans talk. It's a pattern in the way that businesses and big money operate. And whenever you see a big push to start first in the tax plan, and then it, you know, rolls over into business, that means that they're preparing themselves for something. The deregulation, look at what they are deregulating. They're deregulating specific things, and they're all related to investment. So passive income. Yeah, look at the, I mean, really, I mean, this stuff is Googleable. Right.
Why are you even telling me this today? This is probably that cryptocurrency stuff. So, you know, most of the people they know on the call, I've been, you know, people come on talking about the cryptocurrency stuff. I'm like, oh, just please, I don't tie the hair in it. But
right.
It's because they come on saying, oh, we need to invest. You're not investing, you're speculating, you're trading, you're doing something. So, I know, like I told you, I've been speaking to some really smart people who know what they're doing with this thing. It's coming. There's nothing you, I, or anyone else can do to stop it. This cryptocurrency thing is going to be a new boom. So I'm thinking maybe they're, like, and you remember like how I told you, it's allowing them new speculatory options. You know, it's giving them a new way to trade.
Well, before you speculate, let me tell you the biggest one. The estate tax is gone.
So if you leave money to your kids, is what you're saying?
The estate tax is eliminated completely as of 2018. There will be no estate tax.
Okay.
That is the biggest one.
Okay. So they can pass money on to their kids without paying taxes.
Absolutely. You can pass money on. It's not just the estate tax. It's what's linked to the estate tax. What's linked to the estate tax is the gift tax, right? What's linked to estate is gift and also inheritance. So you can now move money amongst families tax-free.
All right. Ladies and gentlemen, if this is not a cue or, like she said, the tea leaves that's telling you now's the time to start prioritizing wealth, now's the time to start focusing on building your legacy, I don't know what is. Because when you watch, like I said earlier in the call, you know, we need to, go into the flow of what's happening in the economy, what's going on in the flow, like she said, of the big money. Right, we can ride that wave. We can use those things to our advantage. So I'm going to talk with the sister a little bit more. I was on the phone for about 90 hours today. She ain't say not one of these things. So, lady, I guess you would say, yeah, you ain't say nothing. You ain't say none of this. But that's
well, we
right.
were talking about something else. Thank you, brothers and sisters, for your time. I'm happy to give you as much information as I can. Thanks for
Right, so we have a couple of people in the queue. And then we're going to close out this call. Sister Constance and then Sister Ma.
Yeah. Hello?
Hello? Sister Constance. Peace, sister. How are you?
Yeah. Hey, how are you? Happy New Year to everyone.
Happy New Year.
I just wanted to touch real quick. I think definitely something going on with the cryptocurrency. I've been in it, dibbling, dabbling in and out of it, trying to get a better understanding of it. And from my understanding is they have a Bitcoin that is being promoted called Ripple. And basically the whole idea behind the whole technology was to get out of using the banks as a third party. And Ripple essentially is what I feel is how the banks are edging their way into the cryptocurrency. Bitcoin essentially is supposed to be decentralized, which means technically it's not supposed to be regulated or the banks can't track or the government can't track who is doing what. It's pretty much an open source as far as the ledger. There's a lot of noise around this Ripple, and I've seen a lot of documents saying that that's how they are sneaking their way into taken out essentially Bitcoin. Yes.
Yeah.
I feel like it is something going on and it do involve this cryptocurrency world. And I just wanted to say that definitely is a scary thing to think of. And people are saying if Ripple succeed the way they are projecting, then that's the end pretty much essentially of cryptocurrency, because they will gain control of that whole space.
All right. I just want to clarify, because this is what was causing my aversion to the whole cryptocurrency thing. When everybody was saying, they kept saying cryptocurrency and then using Bitcoin synonymously with cryptocurrency, and that's really not what it is. Bitcoin is a cryptocurrency, but there's tons of other ones there, right?
So I just want to
clarify to everyone on the call, because there may be some people who have not investigated it, and then they know, I'm on a call, someone starts mentioning it, I'm like virtually rolling my eyes, because they start talking about it like it's a house or something, and it has no underlying fundamentals in order to do the technical analysis or any valuation or whatever. But what's happening is the cryptocurrency as a digital asset class. These are smart people talking. This is how you really start looking at where places to put your money when people start talking. So you have asset classes. So you have, the equities, which are the stocks, and you have, you have the precious metals, gold, silver, palladium, things like that. And now you have a new asset class, which is becoming these digital asset classes, which are these cryptocurrencies. These cryptocurrencies, the individual currencies, are supposed to have underlying functionality. Bitcoin basically had no functionality except that it was supposed to be anonymous, and you would be able to do transactions. So when people were saying, using it as an alternative to cash, that's when I was like, all right, you sound stupid, because you have to convert it back into cash and you have to use cash to buy it. But now people are saying that they're using it, breaking it down into all these little micro nuanced numbers, and it's basically now an asset class. They are acknowledging the fact that people are speculating in this, and speculating just means you buy at 1,000, you're hoping a sucker comes along and buy at 1,100. And they are now acknowledging that's what it is, right? Ripple is the banks. Ripple is, I think it's like 8 banks. That is their that's their cryptocurrency, and essentially what that cryptocurrency is going to do, it actually is providing value. It's going to allow banks to transfer large sums of money between each other. They do that already. They do the digital transactions, but it's going to allow the transactions to be faster and more secure using the underlying technology of, in Ripple, that it's called XBR. That is actual value. And that's why people believe it will surpass Bitcoin, because it has useful value. It creates efficiency in the banking industry, and then the banking industry is able to save billions of dollars. And so that's the banking industry fighting as a way to save its dominant position in the financial hierarchy of our economy. But, the point that I want to make, though, is like we're moving towards that. We're moving towards that as a new investment class. If it's something that you're interested in, just take a look. You got a lot of noise. Hold on, let me mute your phone. You got a lot of noise. If you're thinking about looking into it, just understand, right? So it's not the same thing like you're investing in a rental property or something else. Just understand that you are speculating, basically gambling. You're putting some money up there. You're saying, I'm going to ride this crazy wave right now. It's like at the beginning of the internet. I don't know if you guys remember the run-up in 98, 99, before the 2000 burst. The internet was really big. It was all these weird dot-coms about all kinds of weird stuff. They didn't know what it was going to be. They didn't know how big it was going to be. That's essentially what's going on with the mania with cryptocurrencies now, to put things in perspective. So
you know, I'm not going to sit here and start trying to break down the individual ones. It's not that I know so much about it, but now it makes sense to me. Whereas everyone else that was trying to explain it to me, it was just sounding crazy to me. Sister Constance, do you have anything you want to add in conclusion?
No, that pretty much summed it up. But when I heard everything that was going on as far as the taxes and the benefits as far as investing, as you know, this cryptocurrency, everybody is pouring money into the unknown. So I don't know, but I definitely feel as though we definitely need to educate ourselves more on what's going on. And I'm actually in a group, and a lending platform was presented to pretty much in the group. It's all African Americans, Black, and it kind of bothered me that it wasn't being presented by African Americans. As we know, I feel like we always second or to last to have control in it. And when I'm understanding in the crypto space, there are no Black exchanges, Black brand owned exchanges. Most of the people that are coming up with these coins, of course, are not African American. So I feel as though there's definitely a void that needs to be filled. And if we're going to have a play in it, we should have some type of control over, especially in these exchanges. So some more investigation needs to be done, and we need to get in the game as far as having control in this cryptocurrency, for whatever it may be.
Okay. I agree, sister. Because the exchanges is the real problem right now.
Yeah. And these exchanges, you know, to get in, you know, it's a lot of information, pictures, social security numbers and stuff. And I just feel like, you know, if we don't have at least one exchange being controlled by us, I mean, who's to say they can stop us? I mean, it's just a lot of stuff that can go on if we're not pushing the button. So.
All right. Thank you, sister.
Mm-hmm.
We got Sister Mai and Brother Jehan.
Hi, I just wanted to add to the some of the information about the tax code, but, you know, it's already coming up on 8 o'clock, and it's really not that important to keep everybody on the call, but there are just some really interesting things that I feel like affects us as a result of the tax code that's not being put out there, and if people will just Google and look up, you know, even just a summary, like USA Today has a really good one. I just recommend that we do that because there's a lot of things that are not known, things that we're going to be taxed on that we never were before, like bonuses at our jobs and perks that they, when the job gives you certain things that were considered entertainment, well, that's going to be considered taxable income to the employee now. You can't write off things like your CPA, you know, doing and your business having the CPA do your as a business expense. That's no longer, you can't deduct that anymore. So, and teachers who often are buying supplies for their students now for their classrooms themselves used to be able to write it off. They've taken that away. There's just a lot of things in this code that is really going to affect us in a major way. And I did hear, this is the last thing, that as a result of this tax bill, that Microsoft is getting hit with a $20 million tax bill. I don't know if that's true or not, but I think that if it is, it's something that's supposed to make us jump for joy and say, oh, so finally the wealthiest, you know, or these big corporations are getting taxed more. But I feel like that's also going to impact us negatively, and that they're just going to leave the country, and that they're one of the biggest employers, you know, here. So anyway, just a lot of underlying things, a lot of things that's going on and that's going to happen as a result of this that we're not thinking about, and we really just need to build and have our own and become self-sufficient, whether it's through cryptocurrency. A lot of different avenues, obviously. We just need to be self-sufficient. Thank you.
Okay. And all right. So we have quite a few. Mr. Mansour, please be brief, brother. Be direct.
Yeah, I will. With all, I respect you. Yeah, and I apologize for
No, there's no need to apologize.
But what you find out every time I try and I speak, it is to try and bring raise the level of consciousness and focus us on dialogue that will begin to bring us into step with what's going on. And that was why I raised the point about the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act of 2017. There is a reason for that. And there is a readiness that we can prepare to benefit from that. The other thing is blockchain. Blockchain has been around for a while now. Unfortunately, whenever we as a community find out about anything, it's at the point of everybody know about it, and it's at the point of danger, getting ready to blow up. And I say that because blockchain or cryptocurrency is simply medium that's been designed for exchange. It allows buyers and sellers to connect directly. And whereas up to now, primarily when you have a buyer and a seller coming together, then the banking system has been set up by certain people so that they are the ones that will provide money as this medium of exchange so that the buyer and the seller can use this money as a medium of exchange. So what has happened now with technology is that the bank as a middleman has been eliminated, and the technology allowed the buyer and the seller to connect directly through blockchain or cryptocurrency. And what has happened is, the banks have been fighting it because, naturally, they have worked hard and long to gain the control that they have, and they're not going to give it up easily. But then on the other hand, this value that's being created in the blockchain is what I want to warn us against, because it's a medium of exchange, and it has been converted into what is amounting to a Ponzi scheme. And I just want to throw that out. I'm not an expert. But I want to throw it out to my brothers and sisters to wake up. You're not coming into something that is new and people are just now finding out all about, and you want to bet the farm on. You want to find out what it's all about. And I look forward to an opportunity where we can have more direct dialogue in terms of how we can use securitization. Securitization, simply put, is the issuance of stocks and bonds. When you look at the 1% and the 99%, the question is, how did the 1% get this disproportionate amount of the resources? And the answer, simply put, is by amassing ownership of stocks and bonds. Stocks and bonds come from corporations. It's a means of corporations denoting their wealth. We have not been able to use the proper vehicle in this capitalistic system, and as a result, our mindset, our mentality is one of consumers or employers. So you'll find us looking at things from an employer perspective as opposed to an owner perspective. And so I'm looking forward to working with you, Brother Lou, so that we can come in concert together. This, I think it was Sister Shana, the CPA. We're looking for talking to professional organizations, black lawyers, black CPAs, black farmers. We have collectively an untapped resource that we're trying to organize with SBAI. That is, we have the potential for making this system work for us. When we look at the Congressional Black Caucus, that's the most powerful group in Washington. However, it don't work for our best interest. When we look at the groups like black CPAs, lawyers, et cetera, black farmers, again, you have highly intelligent, some of the most highly intelligent people in the universe in these groups. But again, operating like metaphorically like static electricity. We can see them, but they're not doing anything in terms of addressing how we as a community can rebuild our inner cities, how we can make trade work for us as American workers, and how we can play a demonstrable role in creating wealth in through trade which will address opportunities to revitalize our national economy and benefit from it. So with that, again, let me say again, I just appreciate the opportunity to share this with you, and I look forward to finding ways that we can even share more. Thank you very much.
Okay, brother. And Brother Ty, what's going on, brother?
Hey, how's it going?
All right. How you been, man? Happy New Year to you.
Been doing well, thank you. I just had a quick suggestion to the cryptocurrency people about the making an exchange of some sort. Sorry, I'm a bit winded. I recommend looking at Exodus.io. It may be something of what you're looking for in terms of design details, because it's its own downloadable wallet.
That's said what again? I'm sorry, brother.
Huh?
I didn't hear you. You said what? What did you say? You said an ICO. You said
no. The name of the site is called Exodus.io.
Okay.
It's a type of wallet that's also an exchange that hosts altcoins.
Uh-huh.
I figured amidst that you could create your own altcoin and reduce the fees by using your coin.
Okay.
So residually, it'll go up in value over time as an idea, and so you host
it. And they want everything like your mother's maiden name and everything like Coinbase or is this an anonymous wallet?
I mean, it just depends on how you want to go about the design. I mean, I use Binance, and I don't have to use all the registration information to do my trades.
Okay, because I know a lot of the people who've been trading using Coinbase and, you know, the past couple of years, they're about to be in for a hell of a surprise because the IRS just leaned on Coinbase and told them to turn over records for, I think it was 480,000 people or something like that. I don't know. It was some crazy number, and they basically have all the – so they basically know everyone that's made money, made trades, what you traded, and all of this stuff. So the underlying premise of which Bitcoin was supposed to be created, which was anonymity, that right there is totally out the window when you're dealing with Coinbase and I believe – what's the other one? GDAX or something like that, right? So those are the two biggest main exchanges – of how you turn these cryptocurrencies back into actual cash, or you know how you use your cash to buy it and turn it out. So what Sister was saying in terms of some of these other exchanges probably would have to go offshore, right, because the regulations here in America are really stringent, probably would have to go offshore, and even some of those offshore exchanges you have to put in some types of series of some security protocols and redundancies and things like that, because the one that was in Japan, what it was, Mt. Gox, that was hacked and, you know, defaulted. And so it's not that easy to create one, but we do have an opportunity to create an ICO, which is our own token, our own coin. As a people, we have that opportunity, but I don't want to start getting into that because that's a little, you know, crazy. The amount of money that's needed to even put one of these things together is crazy. And, you know, we're having
like
a problem getting 2,000 members. Yeah, you know, we're having a problem getting 2,000 members, much less coming up with, you know, 500 grand to create one of these coins. So thank you so much, brothers. We got Sister Shauna in the queue, and then we are going to close out this call. All
right,
is there anything else you want to add in conclusion, brother?
No, that was good. That was pretty good.
Okay. All right, thank you. Sister Shauna.
Hey, Brother Lou. I just wanted to add real quick to what the sister was saying about Microsoft, the $20 billion tax bill. It's a repatriation, which means they're kind of like Amazon. They're being taxed because of the income that they're receiving overseas. So it's not anything. It's not affecting us directly. It's about bringing the job, you know, the work that they have from being done overseas and the money that they're making overseas. They're being taxed for that money. So hopefully, I guess the point of doing it that way is for them to bring the job and the money that they're making overseas to bring it back home. So that's the reason for the Microsoft tax bill, as well as Amazon. Amazon is being hit with a very huge tax bill from the EU because of the money that they're making overseas.
Well, I didn't look into that. If so, you're saying a U.S. tax bill, because one of the things that I know is a lot of these major corporations, they have trillions of dollars offshore. They have trillions of dollars just sitting there. They usually funnel it through Ireland and Bahamas and some of those other tax havens. And I know when Donald Trump first came in, he was saying that he wants to get that money back in, and he would give them a reduced tax rate. So what I'm wondering is, when you guys are saying hit with a tax bill, are these the penalties, or is this the reduced tax rate? So let's say they have $100 billion sitting offshore from all the business that they do all across the world. Paying 20% taxes on that is really not bad, as a corporate rate. Maybe they have $200 billion, and maybe that only represents 10%. So that's why I didn't research that. Is it that one, or is it okay?
The repatriation provision is at 10%. So that's 10% of what they've earned overseas, and it's not just Microsoft. It's Microsoft. It's Apple. It's Amazon. It's all of them are being hit with a huge bill for all, and the IRS gets a 3-year look back and a 10-year audit provision. So I don't know how many years that it represents, that $20 billion or $132 million for Apple and so forth and so on. I don't know how many years they went back. But that provision is at 10%, and that's the repatriation provision rate.
Look at that. That's crazy. So they got to pay 20. They got to pay 20. What, you said 20 million?
Okay. Microsoft has to pay $20 billion.
$20 billion. That means they made $200 billion. Is that what that means?
That's what 10% means. Apple's is $40 billion.
So they made $400 billion, and that's not even in America. This is all across seas. Yeah, that's crazy. Pay attention, folks. This is world-changing money. Yeah, thank you so much.
I just wanted to clarify that. Okay, thanks.
All right. So, ladies and gentlemen, yeah, my mind is blown for the night. So, everyone, go out there and create the next iPhone. Let's create one for the brothers and the sisters. All right. We're going to end this call. I want to thank everyone for hanging out with us tonight. And then I just want to close by inviting you once again, if you are not yet a member, please visit blackwalletsmatter.org. Click the menu button. You can make a one-time contribution. I forgot what the name of that link is, but it says something about make a one-time contribution. Or if you believe in our mission and you want to help us create change in the world and for our community, then we definitely invite you to become a member. And you can become a member, again, like I said, at the silver supporter level, which is $10 a month, at the golden ambassador level at $25 a month, or at the $50 a month level, which is a platinum champion. All right. Good night, brothers and sisters, and everyone be safe. This was a great call to bring in the new year. We were able to share the time together.
Right.
Everybody, happy new year.
No, I know.
All right.
Good night.